Hi, and welcome to the Active Code Podcast, brought to you by Aspire Active Partnerships. I'm Paul Griffiths, and joining me each week on the pod is Luke Johnson.
Aspire Active Partnerships is a community of like-minded business leaders who all believe that collaboration in the sports coaching and children's activity sector is essential for success. We've proven that working in collaboration does benefit business growth and essentially helps more children be more active more often.
To combat physical inactivity, we need organisations that are performing at their very best. Organisations will only operate to high standards if they are led well. So, if we can focus on developing high-quality leaders throughout an organisation, not just at the top, customers will experience higher quality services, which means heightened enjoyment levels and increased levels of physical activity. And if we do this at an early age, we know that we can build the foundations for a more active, happier and healthier life. The Active Code investigates what it really takes to be a successful leader and how organisations can combat physical inactivity.
We won't be alone through this journey. We are joined by business owners and experts from our sector, as well as inspirational people from outside our industry. We'll understand the importance of physical activity to our guests, reflect on leadership experiences, and gain thought-provoking insights on how we can crack the Active Code and get more children more active more often. If you like what you hear, please leave us a rating and subscribe wherever you get your pods. In this episode of The Active Code, we're talking to Ben Kirk, co-founder and director at Inspired Schools, who aim to create happier, healthier and more active schools. Ben is a former secondary school PE teacher and in his NQT year got graded outstanding by Ofsted, which is no mean feat. Ben also played semi-professional football in the Conference South. Before founding Inspired Schools, he started his own sports coaching company in 2013. This all totals over 14 years of experience in the industry. We're eager to hear more about Ben's career experiences as a leader and a champion of happier and healthier children. Welcome to the podcast, Ben.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. I've covered some of your career highlights very briefly there in the introduction. Could you put a bit more meat on the bones regards your professional journey and transition through your various roles?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, happy to. If I talk professional from a career point of view rather than football to start with, yeah, it was, I suppose, a long, winding journey to where I've actually ended up here now. So finished my degree, or even going back further than that, finished my college A-levels. Didn't really know what it was I wanted to do. I guess I followed the trodden path, if you like, from secondary, having been good at sport and good at numerous sports, and then kind of funneled into, oh, you're good at sports, so you probably should do A-level PE. So I did that, did well at that, played, again, sport to a good level, did my degree, which again was in sport education and sports coaching, something like that. And it was, again, at that point, even when I finished my degree, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I guess, like I said, followed the trodden path. People suggested that, yeah, that was the route to go down. And to be honest, being a teacher was something I never really wanted to be. But having a sports degree, I guess, was a little bit limited as to what I could do after my degree. I've become a professional coach, but there were limited opportunities to do that, and certainly to earn a full-time salary doing that. So I found myself working, which is interesting in itself, that I work for our local sports partnership here in Somerset, so SAS, Somerset Activity Sports Partnership, and was a sports coach for them, going in and delivering PPA and CPD, all the things that we do as a company now. And then I left that role. I actually got offered a job with the FA as an FA tutor, like a skills coach type job. I turned it down and went traveling with Siobhan, my wife. We weren't married at the time, but we went traveling for a year, took a year out. And again, I didn't really feel like I'd found myself and what it was I wanted to do. Came back from traveling, did my PGCE. Again, just did it because it was something that other people were doing, and what else was I going to do? So did my PGCE. Then I went in to teach at secondary school. And then I guess it's probably relevant to tie that into my footballing career or failed career, however you want to look at it. I was playing semi-professional, as you mentioned, in the Conference South whilst I was teaching. And it just got to a point whereby I couldn't do both together. It was just nigh on impossible to manage the hours. I was driving an hour and 20 minutes to school every morning and after school home. And anybody that's worked in that environment know that when you get home, that doesn't necessarily mean your day's finished. So my days were just so full with travel, with planning, with marking, plus then Tuesdays and Thursdays traveling to Western Supermare for training. Saturdays or even Tuesday nights, we could be playing anywhere in the south of the country, from Dover to deepest, darkest Cornwall. So I had to make a choice as to what I wanted to do, really. And that was the kind of point where actually I couldn't coast anymore. I couldn't just take the path of least resistance. I needed to make a choice as to what my future would hold. Siobhan fell pregnant with our first daughter at the time, who's now 6, 7 next week. And my decision was to quit teaching, much to my parents' disgust. You know, full-time job for life. But I just knew it wasn't me. I just knew I had more to give. There was more to me than being defined by being a teacher. And that's not to downplay teachers' roles. It just wasn't for me. For a number of reasons, I think. I love my football so much that I just couldn't envisage my life without that. And I guess secondly, I enjoyed the teaching element of it. And I enjoyed the clubs that I delivered. I enjoyed working with teams. But the planning, the marking and stuff just really got to me. So yeah, that was my choice. I then went back and approached schools that I used to work in when I was with SASP. And fortunately enough, I was able to generate enough work that was enough to pay the bills, pay the mortgage and sustain us as a family. I was actually delivering 2 days a week through that self-employed at the time. I had no vision of developing and starting a business at that point. It was just how can I make enough money with my football money with this to pay the bills and be in a similar position that we were before. So I actually sold insurance. I was an insurance salesman. I was a primary school PE teacher, and I got a job with Bristol City Football Academy coaching the under 13s. So just did anything I could really to get by. And then I guess given the nature of, as you said, I was graded outstanding in my NQT year, so I'm a good teacher, and more primary schools wanted me than I could deliver myself. So gradually, the Bristol City work had to stop. My insurance sales, fortunately, came to a halt, which I was terrible at, so that was probably a good thing. And then, yeah, got to a point where I had to start recruiting our first members of staff and realising, well, actually, this could be a business. This could be something that this could be me. And yeah, I mean, I can go into detail as to, I know exactly where the point in my life whereby a switch flicked in me and I became this sort of driven, hungry business person, and not necessarily hungry from a monetary point of view, but hungry from a, let's get children active, let's make a difference, let's leave a legacy, I suppose, and really kick on with that. And I can go into more detail on that if you want me to. I know I've talked for a while here.
I was going to say, Ben, is that your purpose now? Is that, you said at the start of this, it's kind of, you went into that journey, you didn't really know your purpose, but have you found your purpose now?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I love what I do now, which helps. So I don't mind working evenings. I don't mind putting the hard yards in because it's for something that I'm really passionate about. And yeah, ultimately, as you both know, our vision as a business is very aligned to yours, in that we want to raise physical activity levels, not just at schools, but in the home as well, active families, active schools, because we know and we've seen the benefits that it will have on schools, but also the children as well. So that's where our passion lies. From a business perspective, I only realized that when my football career came to an end after a knee injury, but more than that, it was when my best friend passed away. So 6 years ago, I lost my best mate, just six and a bit years ago, to leukemia. And that was a point whereby, so I lost my best friend, and then 3 months later I had a knee injury, and that was my football career done. And both of those things took up so much of my time, I don't mean took up my time with Luke, but there was a massive void there where I'd speak to him on a daily basis. He was a football person as well, involved with football as football manager. So the time that I would spend speaking to him, playing football at the weekends, Tuesday or Thursday nights, at the time I didn't realise this, but I'm not very good at expressing my emotions. But reflecting on it now, I can clearly see that I just subconsciously filled that time with the business and what we could do and achieve as a business. So that's how I got to that point of realizing what my purpose is and what our vision is as a company.
Great. Yeah, so you said that it's kind of like a switch, a flick, and I know exactly where you're coming from now, and I'm sure there's lots of business owners people in general, I think, struggle at times to really understand why am I here? What is my purpose? And that I'm not going to go into any more detail on that because that's a whole podcast in its own right. But it's really interesting that I just picked up on that with regards to you couldn't really find that purpose, but now you've got it, and obviously that helps drive forwards you, the organisation, the business, the people within your organisation as well. So yeah, really, really good to share that. Thanks, Ben.
You've talked about trying to help raise physical activity levels, predominantly in children, in schools and in homes. What does physical activity mean to you?
Well, that's a great question. Me as a person and as a business owner, it's vital to me as part of my weekly, daily routine. And I know that probably isn't what you're aiming the question at, and I'll go into the children's side of things in a second. But certainly for me as a business owner, as a dad, I try and lead by example at home. But that's not why I exercise. I exercise so that I can perform my best at work. And whether that's having a brain break in the middle of the day, and we're lucky enough to have a gym in our garage, so I go in there for 45 minutes to an hour, work out, come back, and I'm so much more productive when I do that. But my anchor point for working out was always my football. So when I played football, I had to be fit so that I could perform at my best on a Tuesday and Saturday. And it took me a while to realize, well, actually, I've not got that anymore. So when I finished playing football, I lost my purpose with that. And I lost, put on weight, didn't exercise as much. Whereas now I realize that my anchor point is I need to be healthy to lead by example for my kids, but also to perform at my best on a daily basis. So that's me. That's why I'm active and why I encourage the girls to be active as well. Physical activity from a point of view of the children that we impact on a daily basis, it's for me as a business owner and for all of our coaches as well, it's seeing the difference that you can make to a child or to a group of children that perhaps would struggle in a classroom, would potentially be struggling to sit down and listen for a whole lesson, but you get them outside and you see them in this different environment and they become a different child. They're enthusiastic, they're active, they're just loving it, they've got a smile on their face. So for me, I've seen the enjoyment that it can bring children. And one of our mantras as a company is, and this stems back to my PGCE, whereby during one of my placements, one of my mentors said, your challenge as a PE teacher is to make it every child's favorite lesson of the week. And that's what I've passed on to our staff, and that's my challenge to them, is to make it every child's favorite lesson. And there are children that I've taught in the past, certainly when I came back into coaching, having been into secondary school, I noticed a massive drop off in physical activity levels from even 2006 when I finished my undergrad degree to 2013 coming back into primary schools, and seeing that children were coming in with they weren't as physically literate as they were previously. They weren't as active as they were before. And delivering high quality, fun, engaging PE lessons that are differentiated to children, that everybody can access it. That was what really fired me up. And I've there is a lovely story of what's lovely for me, not so much the mum at the time, but a girl who I used to go to school with. They ended up teaching her daughter at one of our schools. And this is actually a part in the book that I've written, this story, and she's okay with me sharing this. So her daughter wasn't a lover of PE at the time, and she was almost apologetic to me when I started delivering at the school because she knew me and how sporty I was. And she said, oh, I'm really sorry that my daughter isn't really into PE. And after a month or two, however long it was, it was really clear that she hadn't been part of really high quality PE lessons. She was playing in games against boys or against more able girls, and she just wasn't able to access the lesson. She'd switched off to it. She became a child that, I don't like PE. She'd try and forget her kit. She wouldn't bring her kit to school, trying to drop out of that lesson. But with a few tweaks and differentiated lessons, we made it really fun for her. And now she's competing in triathlons and she's an amazing swimmer. And that's not just my impact on her. It's our coaching team, but also the staff at the school as well. But I'd like to think I had a big part to play in it by just delivering, being enthusiastic around PE. And it's not just PE. So we're very passionate about getting kids active, and PE is obviously one vehicle to do that. But for her, she's now found really loads of enjoyment in swimming, running, and cycling. So yeah, that's a lovely story for what PE and physical activity means to me.
Yeah, just from your perspective, Ben, to your routine, if you like. So you said before you had football that was your kind of main driver to be active outside of the game. Obviously now that's gone, and you said the business and the family are the key drivers. Are you someone that needs to have a goal to work towards? And then do you have to put that into a daily routine?
Yeah, for me personally, 100% I have to. And I mentioned the term anchor point, and I only heard that term about a month ago through listening to the High Performance podcast with Jake Humphreys. But yeah, he was interviewing, I can't remember who it was, but they were talking about anchor points. I think it was Stephen Bartlett, the business owner, the entrepreneur. And he was saying that his anchor point, or the reason he worked out, was to look good. And I'll be honest, I was guilty of that. So I'd finish the football season. I would do heavyweight training, beach weights, so you'd look good in the summer. And the same, well, not now so much, but the same even after I finished my career, I would go through these sort of peaks and troughs of thinking, oh, I'll put on a bit of weight after Christmas, I'll be all right, I'll carry on. I'd always work out, but I wasn't necessarily healthy. I wouldn't push myself. And then come April, May time, I think, right, I need to lose some weight. I would then up my training. And then come September, October time, it would dip off. And what I've realized now is that my anchor point wasn't a healthy one, in that it was just to look good for a vanity point of view. Whereas now, yes, I need to do it for the business and to feel healthy. I feel so much better and healthier at the moment. But equally, like you say, a goal to aim for. So I'm actually doing the Bristol Half Marathon in September. And I suppose for different people, it works in different ways. That's my goal that I'm aiming towards. I am a competitive person by nature, so I need to set myself milestones to try and better myself. So I did the Bath Half Marathon in 2009 when I was in my prime, I guess, as a footballer. I actually played football the day before, then ran a half marathon the day after. So my challenge now is to beat my time from 2009, which is going to be no mean feat. And I might not achieve it, but I need that. So I know that in the back of my mind, if I don't beat my time, I will be really annoyed with myself. So I know that I'll beat it. I know that I will, even at 36 now. So yeah, goals, anchor 30, points.
36, you're getting on, Ben. You're getting on.
I know, tell me.
36, geez. Put pressure on you now. What was your time, Ben? Because I think it'd be interesting to come back to this when you've done it in September.
Oh, it was like three hours. No, I think it was 1 hour 43, I think, off the top of my head. So not bad.
Yeah, good time.
Not great.
Yeah,
but not
good
bad.
Time. Good time.
So that kind of we'll hold you to that, Ben, in September. That goal setting approach then that you've got in your personal life, for example, that half marathon goal, does that translate into business? So for Inspired Schools, are you very goal-driven? You know, do you have kind of a strategic plan laid out and you've got milestones that you want to hit?
Yeah, we do. As a business, we set ourselves targets and we do it in terms of the academic year. So we work in terms of terms and what we want to do each term. And we set ourselves goals within that term and action points that we need to put in place to then be able to hit those goals at the end of every term. We set ourselves two goals. So we set ourselves a stretch goal and a goal that is more attainable that we think we can hit. And the stretch goal is something that if we get there, amazing. But if we don't, as long as we hit that goal, the normal goal, then that's good for us. And we do that across the whole business, really. So we equate that to, so Inspired Playgrounds, that specific project, we equate that to number of schools that we've partnered with per term, and also per year. And then we also, with our coaching, we equate that to number of hours rather than number of schools. So number of hours we deliver on a weekly basis. But more than that, I suppose it's the process of how we're going to get to that point. So what campaigns are we going to put in place to hit those targets so that when we, perhaps if we don't hit a target, we can reflect and say, well, actually, we didn't do this campaign that we said we were going to do. Or if we did hit the stretch target, we can look back and think, well, this Facebook campaign that we ran generated 100 leads. Of those 100 leads, 10 became contacts that we ended up working with. And as you both know, in the world of education, you can set targets per term or per year. We've had schools that are become a lead. Well, we had a school that became a lead about 3 years ago, and then suddenly they ring us and say, oh, we've got everything sorted now, the budget's in place, we want to join. So it's not as always as cut and dry as hitting those targets every single term, but it's making sure that the processes are in place to allow us to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting point, that, isn't it? A lot of people we talk to in the sector, you know, it's a long lead time from that initial conversation, talking to a school to winning that work and helping that school. I know when we started tracking that process, probably going back, 4 or 5 years ago, we didn't realise how long it would take in terms of touch points and talking to schools. I think now we're over 21 touch points. And the average conversion is probably about 12 months, Ben. So it doesn't surprise me that, you know, you kind of think that they're not interested and they've solved the problem and gone somewhere else. But, you know, schools are they're busy places, they're busy people. And if you're doing the right things and you're putting the right content out there, sharing the right stories, then, yeah, they're going to come back to you if they know you produce a quality product. So yeah, absolutely. I think that's great to share that. Just moving on to the kind of whilst we're around the business side of things now, just looking onto the leadership side. Who's the most inspirational leader that you've worked with, Ben?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's someone that I've not necessarily worked with in a business capacity, but somebody that has impacted me is Daniel Priestley. And like I said, I've not worked with Daniel, but I've been on his business courses, and I just love his style of leadership. I love how he talks about business. When I read his first book, it felt like he got me, and I certainly understood where he was coming from. So from that perspective of somebody that I look up to and have done his courses and and we have implemented a lot of his teachings into what we do as a business, from campaign driven enterprise where we run specific campaigns every term, every quarter, from the oversubscribed principles that he talks about in his book, to going on the Key Person of Influence accelerator that I went on and have written a book off of the back of it, which will be out in the spring. So as a leader that has impacted me in that regard, it would be him. From a football perspective, if I can relate to that, it would be one of my football coaches from growing up, really, and a leader who has actually my dad and my granddad, to be honest. So it is going right back, but it's something that has always stuck with me. Certainly my dad, his sort of thing growing up was, you only get out what you put in. That's always what he used to bang on at me about well, if you haven't won this football match, what could you have done to have won it? And that's really stuck with me throughout my life. So my dad, whilst it's not somebody that's impacted the business necessarily directly, it has impacted me and who I am as a person, because he's instilled those values in me as the leader of our family, if you like, to ingrain in me that, you know, I'm a hard worker, and hopefully I captained the football team in the Conference South. So I was the captain of Western for 4 seasons, and people that know me know that I'm not an outwardly shouty person. I'm not a leader who would demand verbally performance, but I would do through my own performance. So I would lead by example, and that has sort of translated in me. And same with my dad. Like I said, that you only get out what you put in has really stuck with me. So hopefully those are two good examples.
I think there you've highlighted the importance of having strong leaders at a young age. And the Active Code podcast is about what can leaders in our sector do to encourage young people and children to be more physically active. And those are the type of traits that we're looking for in our industry. Just moving on to you as a leader then, we've covered the people that inspired you. If we asked one of your colleagues what leadership style you have, what would they say?
Yes, it's a great question, and actually quite poignant at the moment, because I did a test, sort of a personality, a psychometric test only this morning to find out what type of person I am. And I am a sociable person that came back on that. So I like engaging with our staff, and they are open enough to come to me with their personal problems or problems that they're experiencing at work. So for me, that's really important to me. And that's been a part of my personality growing up, that I like to be liked. I don't like to cause conflict. And I think that's reflected by hopefully the trust that our staff have in me in particular, and my leadership style. So I think that reflects with that. And I hope that would translate into what they would say. And again, I think it comes back to that leading by example, that I do work hard, even though it's not necessarily visible to our staff, which is, I suppose, a difficult thing for people in our sector, that if you are successful, and I suppose it's a similar thing with head teachers, right? That if you're a successful teacher and head teacher, you actually come away from what you always did in that you're in the classroom or you're out on the field coaching. So I don't coach anymore. I don't deliver as part of our weekly setup. So it's difficult for me to say to our staff, and this is something I'm conscious about, for me to say, this is what I want our lessons to look like. I want them to have learning objectives. I want them to be structured in a way that you go from this to this, you transitions from the lessons, et cetera, et cetera, plenary to finish off, and that, you know, that's a fly by seat of your pants lesson. But I hope that still is respected by our coaches, even though I'm not out there on the front line anymore, that I've been there and done it almost. And I suppose it's like a manager going into a football position for a team or a cricket coach, whatever it might be, when you stop playing, that everything that you did as a player, as a teacher, as a coach is respected. Like you mentioned earlier, Luke, I did get outstanding in my NQT year, which is going back to kind of 2012. And all the feedback and all the testimonials that we've got for our business from sort of day dot are me, and they're all really positive. So I've led by example to get us to where we are now. It's a really good question, actually. And I'll open it back. I'm going to ask you guys a question. Is that enough?
Is you allowed to ask this question?
Is that enough then to still demand that from your team?
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing to look at here, because I've gone through the same process. My business partner, James, has gone through the same process. And if you look at it, if I was looking at this, Ben, from a teaching perspective, I think you said, like, your better teachers tend to be those that get put into more senior roles, and then they end up not teaching, which I always find kind of not difficult to understand, but a little bit kind of like, well, why does that happen? And that's something that kind of puzzled me for some time, because there are some head teachers out there who are amazing. You know, the majority that we work work with are superb leaders. However, there are some in the past that we've come across that, let's say, that are not particularly great leaders. And that's, for me, probably because they were an outstanding teacher. But that transition through into a leadership role that completely pulls away from working with kids, and all of a sudden they're managing a team of adults. It's a completely different ask. So from my experience, that was very daunting to kind of take that leap of faith, I guess, of, well, people are going to be questioning me if I, like you said before, if I start going in and observing lessons or giving feedback and how they can improve. And I think it comes a point in that journey as a leader where, you know, you surround yourself with the right people, and you really kind of hone down on the purpose of the organization and, you know, what everyone's in this for and what we're aiming for, and everything we're doing is in line with that. I'm still, you know, happy to admit I still doubt myself quite a lot. I'm always questioning, I made the right decision, have I spoke to that person in the right way? So I don't think it ever really goes from my point of view. And that transition is a really interesting one. I think that's something on the podcast that we will continue to delve into, because there's a lot of people in that situation.
Yeah. I think I listen to, as you probably gathered from what I've spoken about so far, I listen to a lot of podcasts and I listen to a lot of audio books as well. I'm not a good reader. I always fall asleep if I'm trying to read before bed. This podcast at the moment, the High Performance Podcast, Sir Clive, I've not finished this podcast yet, but Sir Clive Woodward is the latest one that I'm listening to. And it's fascinated me so far, because he's basically said, and I quote, a high performance sports team is exactly the same as a high performance business. And it almost that he believes that he could make it as a sports coach in any sport, doesn't matter, because he was, like you said, he would surround himself with high performing people in those key positions underneath him. And I think that's possibly where we are as a business now, whereby we need that high performing person in that head coach, whatever you want to call it, who is still on the front line delivering, that is going to take on Minor Marcus's legacy, but do you know where I'm coming from? That kind of take on the mantle and start taking it further and hopefully take it on further than we can on our own.
Yeah, and it's an exciting journey as well, Ben. It's definitely something that will help boost the organisation and keep that. I think that, you know, that kind of mindset of what we were talking about, of putting trust in more people around you, and you know, if that person of influence comes into the business with more experience, more qualifications, you know, better suited to that role, again, for me, there's no issues there. And I know for a lot of business leaders that is the case. However, there are some out there that probably see that as a little bit of a, hang on a minute, who's this person? You know, I've got to micromanage them. I don't want them to appear to be better than me. And before they know it, the business falls apart because they've not let go. And that's, again, that's a tricky transition.
Yeah, I agree.
Ben, at a recent Aspire Active Partnerships event, the conference, you name dropped some professional learning books you've been reading. And whenever we're on a video call, I always see the stacks of books behind you. And you've mentioned they might just be for show, and it's actually audiobooks, like you said, that you focus on. But what one thing are you working on currently to be a better leader?
That's a great question. The one thing that I'm working on at the moment in particular is building that team. I think it's clear and simple, really, that I feel like we've got the building blocks in place now to go and make a really huge impact in 2021. And I'm always learning. I love learning. And for me, it's how best to structure that team from admin, from marketing, from the head coach that we just talked about a second ago, from playground installations team, that as a solopreneur, if you like, in the early days where you're doing everything, that we now need to start giving up those roles. But it's not as easy as just going, right, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're doing this. And I think everybody has those bumps in the road where you employ somebody and it's perhaps not the right fit for the business. But then I feel like I'm really good at, like I've got good emotional intelligence and I reflect on me rather than the person coming into the business. So rather than just say someone's come into the business, they've not succeeded, out you go. And it might be that they're the wrong person, but I'm trying to learn now about how best, hence why I did that test today, how best we can put that team together so that we do make the impact that we can this year. Because I know that we can. And almost, you kind of feel like not a fraud necessarily, but that imposter syndrome where people, even if someone says to me now, oh, you're an entrepreneur, it still makes me cringe a little bit because I don't like the word. Even though it is probably true that until we've got a fully functioning business whereby, let's say tomorrow a playground order comes in, I don't have to do anything. It functions itself and I'm managing that process. And people know that if something happens in this part of the installation or working with that school, then they report to this person who would then potentially report to me. So my biggest thing at the moment is building that amongst lots of other things like website development, but that I think comes underneath the bigger picture stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very, if something goes wrong in an organization or like you said, someone's employed and they're not quite the right fit, it's easy to blame that person that's come in rather than take it on the chin and say, well, actually, can I reflect on this? Can I do something different next time to improve? So that's a really good, really good point, really. Just regards our sector that we both work in, what are your views on the leadership within the sector as a whole?
Be careful what I say here. I think there's a case for schools to be a bit more daring and risky and break the mold. And what I mean by that is, and maybe this is skewed by my view on PE and the benefits that it can have, but we still see schools that have got this PE funding that don't use it to its full potential, that will supplement other pots, where we see that if they did spend it in the, and not necessarily on what we do, but using other companies to give the children the best possible experience of PE and physical activity during primary school, that it will actually impact and benefit other areas of the curriculum. So it will improve concentration, attention, focus in the classroom. Ultimately, it, again, I'm not trying to sell my book here, but I talk about it in terms of bamboo. I think it's something like 7 years before bamboo starts to grow, but then within the next cycle of growth, it then shoots up. That's probably completely inaccurate in terms of the number of years. But the point is that you can put everything in place, PE-wise, physical activity, to have that sporting, that healthy, that active culture in a school, that ethos that not only includes the teachers, the pair, but yeah, it branches out wider than that to parents, to the community. We've delivered parent and child workouts, not often enough, but we're guilty of doing that. And on reflection, and I'm sorry, I'm going off on a bit of a tangent here, but a parent and child workout that we've done that targets just girls because of the drop off in girls' physical activity levels as they move through the years and into secondary school. We've had 50 girls attend these workouts, but then our failing is then, well, what happens next? Where do we signpost those children towards? What clubs of the school got in place just for girls potentially, because they don't want to go to a football club, which is mixed because they feel uncomfortable. So in my eyes, there's so much more schools can do. And I appreciate how busy teachers are, and this isn't downplaying their role within a school. I've been a teacher, I know. But there is a place for them to use the support that's available with sports coaching companies, the good ones that are out there that can support their curriculum, but also support their after school clubs and everything going on. So for me, the leaders in schools are hamstrung a little bit or a lot by the government expectations around SATs, around attainment levels, around Ofsted, which in my eyes inhibits some leaders and some teachers from making the really brave decisions to go, actually, we're not going to do maths and English every morning of the week. We're going to do PE first thing, or we're going to do maths, but we're going to have a learning break of 10, 15 minutes at 9:30. And then we're going to come back into the classrooms and restart the lesson. The data's there, the science is there that brain breaks are beneficial. and it will ultimately improve focus, attention, even behavior in the classroom. And then, like I said about the bamboo shoots, when you see a cohort through, you might then start to see that ethos, that culture bearing fruit, that those children attainment levels in some deprived areas where perhaps stats aren't great, but they've got everything in place whereby PE and physical activity is the rock, is the sort of cornerstone for everything that the school does. So that might be a bit, pie in the sky possibly, but yeah, I'd love to see more leaders be brave. And we've had conversations with schools to say, I mean, you may have seen some of my recent social media posts. One on LinkedIn in particular had loads of traction around don't take children out of PE for interventions. It obviously struck a chord with parents and with teachers. And I stand by that 100%. And I think a lot of people do, and even a lot of teachers think, well, actually, we shouldn't be taking the kids out of PE, especially at the moment with the pandemic, with physical activity levels on the decline anyway. There's no justification for it. Everybody knows that they should be getting their 2 hours in a week, 2 hours in a week, 30 minutes a day within the school, but how many actually are? So that would be my thing. Sorry, I know there's a bit of a rant there.
Yeah. Is it, Ben, an educational piece? Ironic, I think, but is it an educational piece for teachers? Because, you know, we know a lot of teachers, they're busy people, you know, stressful job in terms of what they're trying to achieve, especially at the moment with the pandemic. You know, do you believe that all teachers actually have this underpinning knowledge about the benefits of being physically active? Because I think there's a lot of presumption out there that everybody does, but from your experience, do you actually think that the vast majority of teachers and leaders of schools actually really know the benefits of physical activity?
I think it's probably two sides to that, in that maybe more do than perhaps we realise, and they may be not necessarily worried to be outspoken about what should be happening. But you're right, there probably is limited knowledge to the benefits that I mentioned around behavior, focus, concentration. And I think there is that, it's like sort of catch 22, that you've got to be brave to implement these things, to say, well, actually, we'll spend less time in the classroom, but ultimately it's going to be more beneficial to the children. So yeah, I think it's sharing that knowledge of, if there is hard data to say, which there is, to say, well, if you do, like I said, well, Finland have been doing it since the 1960s. They do 45 minutes in the classroom, then they have 15 minute break every 45 minutes. So the data is there. I think it just needs, like you say, maybe it just needs that exposure, and also a success story or multiple success stories of schools going, yeah, we're going to do this. And then in that 5-year cycle to see, well, our attainment's gone from this to this. Our attendance is now much higher, because kids actually love going to school, because they know that after every half an hour, 45 minutes, there's a brain break at the end of it. So the children that struggle in the classroom, they may be better in the classroom, because they know, well, I've got 20 minutes now where I'm going to exercise. And even if they, and what we try and help our schools with is to say, I mean, you would have seen it, we've certainly seen it, whereby there's a child struggling in the classroom, the TA or one-to-one support who they've got will take them out, put them on an iPad, or just let them run around the field for a little bit, and then try and bring them back into the classroom. Whereas if there was something a bit more structured around physical activity to say, well, let's just do 5 minutes, but it's going to be structured, it's going to help your coordination, your communication, and all those functional movement skills that we know are so valuable, then bring them back into the classroom and they'll get more out of that child. So I guess it's a whole, I haven't really answered your question there, Paul. I think it's a combination of both. Yeah. Increasing everybody's knowledge of it, but schools being brave to actually implement it as well.
Yeah. I think school, you know, we're talking now, schools that haven't really changed since probably talking like 120 plus years ago. Yeah, with regards to environments, layouts of schools, timetables, routines, it hasn't really changed a lot. So, you know, I'm not going to go into huge amounts of detail on this now, but I think it's some really interesting points there that have been raised, that what we're probably saying is it needs a big shift. It needs a big shift in terms of the approach, the environment, the understanding, the training of people that work in schools, the knowledge, the tracking of data around it, etc., just to prove that this does work. So that's a, you know, that's a whole new approach, really, and something that we can get a teeth stuck into at another time. But from your experience, Ben, I think with the Active Code, what we're also trying to really pull out is, and it's something that we're big advocates of, is learning from other sectors. So what do you think we can learn from other sectors?
So I'm just scribbling down some notes because I don't want to forget two things that I wanted to bring up, which actually relates to what you've just asked there. I think there's so much we can learn from other sectors. And in, again, I'm going to mention my book again. I apologize. In my book.
Go ahead.
If you had an entrepreneur, let's say a Richard Branson or Deborah Meaden, who's my favorite dragon.
Controversial, Ben. I wasn't expecting that.
What, Deborah Meaden? if you were, or if they were in charge of the PE and sports premium spend, and head teachers had to report directly to them and say, this is what we've done, and these are the results, how many head teachers would be, I'll do that, we're 100% happy with what we've done? So I don't know. I don't think there'll be a huge amount. They stand up in Dragon's Den and say, yeah, this is how we spent the money. It's led to this. These are our outcomes. We've experienced this along the way, but ultimately we're happy with our spend. Don't know. Be a really interesting one to ask a few head teachers. So, and then to segue that into your question, if you look at Google, who I researched for the book, and this, I know we're talking about one of the biggest companies in the world, but if it's good enough for them, then why is it not good enough for a primary school? So they've obviously got funding. They've got a huge amount of money to have gyms on site, but they've got bikes that the staff use there to cycle from areas to areas. So they encourage physical activity. They have brain breaks. They have mental health. That's their job to coach and to help people that are there on site. They will have people that deliver yoga sessions during the day, meditations, whatever it might be. So they are performing obviously at the very, very pinnacle, highest level of business. And every business would love to be like Google are. Are there learnings that we can take as, well, certainly for me as a business, we can, but are there learnings that primary schools can take from that? I think absolutely. And it probably does come back to that leading by example a little bit, whereby I think, yes, teachers are busy, but I would love teachers to be advocates of being physically active and how important that is. So if they are delivering a PE lesson, not doing some marking, sat down in the corner while they're doing gymnastics routines, actually taking part, being a role model in that, but being active throughout the school day. So those brain breaks that I mentioned, I'd love for every school to do at least 2 or 3 physically active brain breaks a day. But again, if teachers are leading that and are involved and active themselves, and it starts from the top down. So if head teachers are delivering assemblies, and at the start of that assembly, there's 5 minutes of a HIIT workout or dance routine that they're all going to do as a school, and the head teacher's doing that, then absolutely. If you look at all the best leaders in business and you read their books, Elon Musk, Richard Branson, all these people, they have physical activity as a really important part of their values. It's really high up. So I think, I mean, it's not going to happen overnight, but one of our missions is to not just the children, but it's to help schools realize that if we are active, we've got a really healthy ethos at the school, we're going to be a higher functioning organization, that teachers are going to come and want to work at that school, because maybe, I don't know, every Friday night before teachers go home, they do something as a staff team to get active before going home, or on a Monday morning or Wednesday lunchtime, whatever it might be. I think schools can do more to be more of an attractive organization to work for around physical activity and having that that ethos.
Excellent. Some key points. You could probably release a book just for top tips for schools to get physical activity embedded more throughout the school day.
You should say that, Luke. I've got a book coming out.
Yeah, which leads us on to the next quick fire question. So we want to give our listeners some tangible takeaways from this podcast. So if listeners wanted to enhance their leadership skills and their business, in addition to your book that's being released in September, what 3 books, podcasts, or people would you recommend?
The High Performance Podcast, which I've mentioned, by Jake Humphreys. It's amazing, and quite often he mentions that teachers have responded really well to that podcast. There's so many learnings and takeaways from there. If you're a business owner, if you're a teacher, if you're a head teacher or a parent even, I've learned a lot as a parent to challenge my children more than I perhaps do. To demand not demand the best from them, but the Phil Neville one in particular stuck out in my mind, that his dad was a lorry driver, and they used to make the kids get up at something like 6 or 7 in the morning. They used to work out as a family, and now Phil Neville does that as a parent, which possibly is a bit too far for me. But all the same, it's really interesting. So high performance podcast, definitely. I also love, so again, talking more from a PE perspective and a delivery perspective, Paul Dix, which I've got actually up there somewhere. It's called When Adults Change, Everything Changes. So that's a really good one on behavior, and his philosophy around behavior. It basically speaks to my behavior management strategy, which isn't autocratic. It's very build a rapport with the kids, about choices, about how to celebrate achievement within that, and not necessarily celebrating a child that hasn't followed instructions but does for the first time and then suddenly they're star of the day. So it's a really good book. And then finally, I guess from a business perspective, I can't not talk about Daniel Priestley, whose 4 books are behind me there. All his books are great. So hopefully that's given you a bit of a broad range of a sort of a sporty podcast, a behavior book for teachers, and then a more business-minded one.
Nice selection.
Yeah, yeah, really, really good. Really good selection.
And I have read them all, I promise.
Without falling asleep.
Well, I can't promise that.
And then another quick fire question then. So what one thing needs to happen to get more children more active more often?
Make it fun. That is quick fire. I'm a little bit controversial in terms of what I think PE should look like. And this goes against the grain a little bit, in that, and coming from a PE teacher, I know what a good lesson looks like. I understand success criteria and learning objectives, etc. But my argument would be, if we trialed PE that was the sole purpose of it was just to make it fun for 5 years, what would happen to children's activity levels? And I'm talking fun from letting the children experience games that perhaps they wouldn't have done. There's research out there to suggest that, you know, we follow this curriculum based on games a lot of the time, football, netball, cricket, all those things. But the data for adults now is that I think it's only something like 12% of adults will take part in team sports, whereas they take part in more physical pursuits like cycling, swimming, running, jogging, yoga, those things that aren't competitive unless you want them to be. I think fun should be, and it certainly is for us, it should be at the cornerstone of what PE and physical activity looks like. Because if children are disengaged and it's not fun, ultimately we as a business, and I'm sure you're the same, we want children to make lifelong healthy choices beyond primary school. It's not enough for us to increase physical activity levels whilst they're at school. That's the easy bit. It's then when they get into secondary and they forget their kits for cross country, to college when it's not compulsory, to then they leave college and there's literally, right, if you want to be active, it's up to you. So that's really important, I think. Sorry, that was a quick fire answer turned into a long one.
I think as well, Ben, on that, the fun side of things, I think a lot of businesses miss this as well. I think the businesses that are successful are those that actually make the environment fun for their team to be part of. And I think that's, I completely agree with you on the fun side of things. I think it often gets overlooked in the education sector with regards to physical education. Fun is a critical element, but without doubt, that kind of filters through into the business world as well. Final question, Ben. What is your advice to help other organisations crack the active code?
Other organisations in the education sector, I would say that you don't necessarily need to develop your own product or project, something new. There's enough out there that you can implement in your school. So I think for organizations that are trying to raise physical activity levels, it's to build good relationships with the school so that they trust you and what you want to implement at that school. And then from there, if you're an organization that is trying to work with primary schools and trying to sell a product into schools, there are a lot out there. There's, as you know, it's a saturated market. So I think it all stems from building that rapport and that trust. You mentioned touch points earlier. We've now got to a point in our journey with Inspired Playgrounds whereby we've had enough interactions with enough schools and enough businesses that something goes up on a Facebook page about what should we do with our playground, and all of our schools pile in and say, this is it. So it's building that trust in schools and delivering a really high product that schools enjoy and use and is sustainable.
Thank you for that, Ben. That concludes the questions. But finally, if people want to get in touch with you or connect or learn a bit more about Inspired Schools, where can they go?
Yeah, so website is inspiredschools.co.uk. We're across social media, so any platform, if you just type in Inspired Schools, you'll be able to find us. Me personally, I'm most active on Instagram, really. But yeah, Instagram, BenKirk8. But yeah, as us as a business, Inspired Schools, inspiredschools.co.uk. And the book will be launching in March or April, fingers crossed. And that book is everything we've kind of spoken about, really. It's how to raise physical activity levels at primary schools. There's a whole quick wins section with 8 quick wins of what schools can implement with no investment, just ideas that we've implemented at our schools that are within that book. So yeah, that will be a good one as well.
Great stuff. Thanks, Ben. Really, really appreciate you coming on. I think it's clear to everybody that you're very driven, passionate. You've got great ambition for the business going forwards. And I think going back to what we spoke about at the start with the whole purpose thing, it's quite clear to me that you've got that, found that purpose, and you understand what you're trying to achieve. And I think you're going to help a lot of schools in 2021 and beyond. So, congratulations on that. I wish you all the very best of luck. And I look forward to reading the book, even though you say that we've probably learned a lot about it during this podcast. I think I will actually read it as well. So thanks very much, Ben.
No problem at all. Copy coming your way. And yeah, thanks for having me on. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Cheers, Ben. Thank you.
See you.
Join us next time for the Active Code podcast. Remember to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. You can connect with us on Twitter @aspire_partners and find out more about us and the network at www.aspireactivepartnerships.co.uk.